Liz Corey.
And I'm Katie King.
And this is
True Crime New England.
What's up, everybody?
Hello. Welcome back to another episode.
Thank you so much for joining us on this beautiful pre-fall, post-barely summer Thursday. We are so happy to have you.
Hello.
How are you guys doing, audience? That's great. Katie, how are you?
Good.
That's great.
Not too shabby around these parts.
Great.
How are you?
I'm doing very well.
Good.
Thanks for asking.
Of course.
Yeah. I've been working a lot. Normally, I have, like, the opportunity to be put on call because sometimes shifts can be slow. Patients, you know, babies sometimes take pause from being born. It just happens occasionally, but I've been working all my shifts lately. Babies do be popping out like it's nobody's business, and I've been working and twerking, so I've been busy.
Yeah, same here, but on the opposite end of the life spectrum.
Right.
Over here.
Right.
I've been working and twerking, but with end of life.
It's so funny how alike and different we are. Especially because, like, everything we do is so different and alike, because we're sitting here, you're wearing all black, and I'm wearing lighter colors. I, this morning at 2:45, helped deliver a baby, and you this afternoon probably pronounced someone.
Yep.
So.
This morning, actually, just several hours after you brought life into this world, I helped declare life out of this front.
Let's air high five, because that's how we do it here at True Crime New England.
Someone's got to do it,
and we're happy to, so you guys, you listeners, don't have to.
Yeah. It's so interesting, too, because I feel like the same way that I think about end of life, like, I feel like it's such an honor and a privilege to be there for someone at that stage of their life.
Absolutely.
Feel like you feel that as well for little babies being born.
100%.
And helping them be born.
I feel like it's almost like I want to ask permission. Like, may I be present for this beautiful moment? Because it's, like, so intimate.
Yeah.
And so personal. And, like, I just want to be like, hello, I know this is very private and, like, you know, everything. Not even just that it's, like, you know, everything's out on the table. But it's also, like, this is a very important moment for your family.
Same.
Right? Exactly.
So weird.
Yeah, it's very bizarre. But it makes it all worth it. In such a weirdly different way for both of our jobs.
So weird and so similar. And you know what I say too? I will tell people it's a labor into this world and it's a labor out of it.
Absolutely.
Sometimes the dying process, there's a lot of work. Like, there's a lot of labor that goes into it. So there's medication and there's all these things that we have to help them make that journey as easy as possible. Mm-hmm. Literally same thing, just very different.
And we use the same words similarly in both. Like, transition is a very common phrase in both birth and death. So very interesting.
Crazy.
It's a lot of very fascinating stuff. So next week, guys, join us on our new podcast, Life and Death, that we'll be starting, where we just talk about this over and over again.
I shit you not. If we had time on our hands, we probably could do that. Like, we'd probably kill it.
And if HIPAA didn't exist?
Oh, listen.
Guys, the stories. The baby names I could tell you about. Ugh. There's so many that I could tell you that are so bad. But there are also so many, like, we had a patient come in for, you know, she just needed to be checked in because she was getting real sick. You know, she had vomiting trouble. And I said, oh, boy, what's his name going to be? Noah. Great. That's so perfect. Because, you know, the other name I heard the other day was, like, made up and had X's in it. And, like, I don't, but Noah, that's perfect. Or, like, Jameson. Oh, great. That's a real name. That's a word. You didn't just think of that and take vowels and consonants and just smash them together. Or, like, take a verb and just say, oh, yeah, his name is this after this one time my cousin, he had a brother's uncle and his foot was in this. And it's like, oh, my God, that's beautiful. But, wow, yeah. Someday we'll do a podcast like that.
If we ever have more time on our hands.
Which we won't. So that's just a fantasy we have, I guess. Anyway.
The case we have today was suggested to us by Elizabeth N. via our website submission tool.
Thank you, Elizabeth N., and I love your name.
A little biased.
It's a little, it is a little biased, but I didn't choose my name, so it's not like I, you know.
Elizabeth N. also wrote in, and she wrote, I was wondering if you could cover the case of Krista Dittmeyer. I went to high school with her and her sister, and I was always so sad about how the media covered her story and tried to focus on some of the aspects of Krista's life that didn't really capture who she was. To me, she was a phenomenal mom who was doing everything she could to take care of her daughter. Thanks and love your podcast.
Well, thank you for the suggestion, Elizabeth. You know, and we were doing, obviously, research on this case, and, you know, before we even get into it, it's hard when all the resources you really have are the media in a way, you know, because they do portray her as clearly something she's not entirely.
For sure.
What I saw her as was this little cutie, because they're like, the main picture they use of her is like her on a swing.
Yeah.
It looks like probably like her senior pictures, maybe. And, what I was reading about her and like her testimony from her friends and her family is that she loved her daughter and that she was just a very social girl who worked hard and was like a just friendly and hardworking and just cared for her daughter. And I think a lot of that gets overlooked, and also a lot of that gets overshadowed in like media and the way cases are covered, because in the true crime world, you have, fans of true crime will say half the time it's like, I hate podcasts or blogs or whatever that say, she lit up a room when she blah, blah, blah. But when you're describing a victim, half the time they are like nice, normal people. And that is true. Like, so how else do you want us to describe them? Like, she was a social butterfly, a wonderful girl who loved shopping and her friends and blah, blah, blah. That's the truth.
Yeah, and she was a kick-ass mom. Like, at the end of the day, everything she was doing was for her daughter.
Right.
Everything she was doing. Did she always make maybe the right, quote-unquote, choices? No, but sometimes, like we talk about, you got to do what you got to do.
Do you always make the right choices, Katie?
Fuck no.
Neither do I.
Fuck no. And it's the same concept, or a very similar concept as sex workers. Like, oh, that person was a sex worker and that line of work is filthy and bad and that's foul and there's other ways to provide for your family and yada yada. You do what you gotta do.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you're not less of a person for doing what you have to do to provide for not only yourself, but for children.
Yeah, absolutely.
Your child. Like, I am never gonna have kids. I don't want kids. Right. I like kids.
Sure.
My cat is like my child. If anyone fucks with me or my cat, I would kill for her. I would kill for my cat. That's my child.
Absolutely.
I'm sure that people feel that way, if not more, about their flesh and blood.
Sure. Like,
I joke that Salem is of my womb.
Well, she is, but yeah.
But just, you know, I think that, Elizabeth, you put it really well, that a lot of the information that we saw, we did our best to kind of work around it, but a lot of the information that we saw was very focused on the circumstances around her murder, as opposed to, you know, the murderers are not good people. It doesn't matter how Krista ended up in that situation. It doesn't matter how the murder took place. And that shouldn't be the whole thing that encompasses the case. So we are going to do our best to kind of tell the full story and really not paint Krista in a positive light, because of course she made mistakes. She's a human being.
Right.
But just kind of tell the full story from all angles.
Absolutely. And without further ado, today we will be covering the murder of Krista Dittmeyer. Okay, Katie, even though we kind of a little bit got into it, let's start with our sources.
Sure. I have information from the Huffington Post, Press Herald, Boston Herald, CBS News Times 2, ChandlerFunerals.com, and ABC News.
All right. I had two articles from Mass Live, an article from the San Diego Union Tribune for some reason, ABC News, two articles from the Press Herald, Boston Herald, the Bridgeton News, Legacy.com, and Conway Daily Sun.
All right.
Let's get into it. Krista Dittmeier was born in Germany on July 8th of 1990. She had one sister. That's literally it. That's all I really know. And that's so typical of these things, you know, and these stories, these smaller stories. And you guys know that. What we do know is that she grew up in Bridgeton, Maine, and she graduated from Lake Region High School in 2008. She moved to Portland very soon after her graduation, and she got a job working as a waitress in South Portland at a restaurant. I don't know which restaurant specifically, you know, it doesn't really matter, but she was working and doing her thing. At some point, she was very lucky, and she became a mom to a little lady named Aaliyah, and it was known that she loved her very, very much. Her daughter, so freaking cute. Cute little lady. And as we kind of said already, she was known as being a social butterfly. She was caring and strong-willed. She loved shopping and spending time with her friends. I imagine living in South Portland, she went to the main mall a lot, yeah. Which to this day is like the only mall around in Maine, New Hampshire, honestly. I live very close to the main mall and it is pretty bustin'. I go there fairly often and I love it. It's a great mall. So I can imagine she probably went there frequently. And that's really, and I hate to say it, that's really all we know about her as a person, like baseline.
Yeah.
But she really just was a standard young mom, you know? She just was doing her thing.
It was written in her obituary that she was known as, quote, a loving, caring, strong-willed person and an attentive, devoted mother.
Devoted. I always love hearing that.
She was busting her ass.
Yeah, absolutely. You have to.
And she's 20 years old
yeah.
at this time. She's 20.
Yeah.
That's not an easy age to be at, period.
Right.
Let alone having a little kiddo.
Yeah.
So she's working hard.
Yeah, absolutely.
On Saturday, April 23rd, 2011, police received a call from a passerby who had come across a black Nissan Sentra that seemed to have been not really abandoned, but just kind of left behind.
Idling,
yes. In the parking lot of Cranmore Ski Mountain. Upon further investigation, the car was found to still be running, with the driver's side door open and the hazard lights flashing.
So ominous.
So this passerby was like, oh, that's strange. I wonder if they're having car trouble. I wonder if, you know, this person is maybe having a medical emergency. I don't know. I'm just going to check it out and be a good Samaritan.
Right.
Thank God this person was a good Samaritan and went over, because inside the car was Krista's 14-month-old daughter, Aaliyah, thankfully unharmed, asleep in her car seat. There was also blood found in the car, which... So ominous, and clearly it didn't, thank God, it didn't come from this 14-month-old baby sleeping peacefully, none the wiser to anything that had happened.
And it's April, too, so it's like 6:30 in the morning, still pretty chilly, not gonna lie, but it definitely could be way worse in terms of temperature.
For sure.
And, you know, with the door open as well, it could be so much worse. I'm so glad she was safe, sleeping, nothing harming her. That's like best case scenario with the situation.
Cranmore Ski Mountain, that's up in northern New Hampshire.
Right.
It's the White Mountains.
Right. It's cold.
It's chilly.
Yeah.
It's absolutely chilly. And reminder, this is True Crime New England. So even though you're hearing, oh, April 23rd, it might be balmy and maybe some wildflowers are blooming. Absolutely not. Most likely there's still snow on the ground.
Up in the White Mountains, there's 100% still snow on the ground.
If not, snow on the forecast for the next week.
Absolutely.
Like, it's not uncommon to see snow well into May.
Yeah.
So I'm just glad that, and honestly too, Krista's such a good mom. She probably dressed her child appropriately.
Yeah, she was probably warm.
Yeah, so.
Thank God.
Daughter is safe, praise. But now there's blood in the car.
So ominous.
And, you know, the car's idling. The hazard lights are on. The driver's side door is open. Who knows where the driver, who is the mother of this child, who knows where she's at? Who knows how long the car's been there?
Right.
You know, there's so many unknowns.
Right. And according to some family members, Krista last spoke to them that Friday night, which was the night before. Her mom said everything seemed normal. The conversation was nothing out of the ordinary. They had plans to see each other that Sunday because it was Easter Sunday, so everything was gonna normal, fine, nothing strange. The other big question, besides where was Krista, was why had she traveled to Conway? Krista had still been living in Portland at this time, and Conway was over an hour away. So why was her car found with her baby an hour away in Conway at 6 in the morning? Police and members of the New Hampshire Fish and Game Department immediately jumped on the case, and they searched all of the woods near the ski area and the mountain. The ski area itself had been closed for the season, of course, because I know we just said there was like snow and stuff, but it wasn't ski season. There was still some foot traffic from joggers, hikers, and there's also a fitness center that was open year round, like on the property or like right around. So people still were around the area, but it wasn't like a super busy place. After intense searching for less than 2 days, Lieutenant Chris Purley spoke to the press, saying, quote, "One thing we're good at in northern New Hampshire is looking out for people lost in the woods," which then he followed up with by saying, quote, "We're confident the area is searched and we're not researching." On top of local search efforts, the FBI provided three agents to help with the search, which is nice. That's good. Three agents, like, I wonder how they like allotted or knew to allot three agents. I don't know, but that's great. Perfect. We love that. And on Monday, which was now 2 days after her car was found, a nearby retention pond near the parking lot was drained. The water was cloudy. The investigators drained it just to be super sure. They found nothing there, unfortunately, because it was just kind of like a last hope because it was nearby, it was convenient. Unfortunately, there was nothing there.
Within several days, authorities realized that this was not the only pond on the property.
Dun dun.
Divers were sent to search the large snowmaking pond about a quarter mile from where Chris's car was found. 5 days after she was last seen, they found Chris's body.
How terrible.
Her cause of death was determined to be prolonged cold water submersion.
That's so awful.
That's one of the most horrific things I've ever heard, honestly, just imagining going through that.
Just aspect of the cold water shock is terrifying.
Oh God, there's been times I've jumped into like a friend's pool or something and the water's been cold, and maybe it's just me, or maybe it's just, I know this happens to other people too, but there's one time I jumped into my friend's pool and I went swimming in the ocean and it was reasonable outside, but it was cold in the water.
Of course.
And I jumped in just like fully submerged. And when I came up, I felt like I couldn't breathe.
Sure.
Like I really was taking deep breaths, and my body was like, Katie, what the fuck are you doing? Get out of the water. This is cold as shit. And there's an adjustment period, but we're talking
Prolonged.
prolonged, and we just discussed not a balmy spring day. Oh God.
I wish we knew how long she was in there.
I know.
So naturally, they find her body and they're like, fuck. This is obviously worst case scenario. Luckily, they have Aaliyah. She's safe. She's in the care of her family. And they go, okay, well, where's Aaliyah's dad? Who's her dad? Oh, and naturally, that's where I would look too, boyfriend, husband, whoever, they always do it. Well, Chris's boyfriend, Kyle Acker, he actually was in jail at the time for gun and drug charges. So that theory was dropped pretty quickly. And as we know, yes, you absolutely can still be not in charge, but responsible for somebody's death while in jail, hiring a hitman, whatever. But Kyle was cleared pretty quickly. So he was cleared and was like, obviously devastated because Aaliyah was his daughter, and Krista obviously was his girlfriend, and that's fucking terrible. And he's in jail, so he has to mourn from his jail cell, and he can't comfort his baby, and that's terrible. So it was like so sad. And now the police are like, well, there's our go-to, which is usually reliable, and now it's not. So what do we do?
At the same time they were looking into Kyle, they were also looking into Chris's phone records. And now this is not an immediate process. There's a lot of legal stuff that you have to go through, even though the person is deceased.
Right.
That doesn't just give you permission to go through their phone.
Right.
So, you know, they're getting all the legal paperwork all set and they're getting permission to go through her phone and they're covering all their bases. You know, they're like, okay, we're going to go through her phone. We're also going to talk to Kyle. Definitely not Kyle. Sorry, Kyle.
Right.
We got access to her phone.
Mm.
That's so fascinating because the last text message she received, or one of the last text messages that she received that seemed a little out of place.
Right.
Just from her routine and who she had been regularly texting with.
Like it wasn't her mom.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. There weren't that many other text messages in the history, or something alerted police to say this text message is abnormal. It stands out to us.
Yeah.
At 9:43 p.m. on April 22nd, Krista received a text message from an acquaintance, 28-year-old Michael Patelis from Ossipee, New Hampshire.
Now, I could see why they'd be like, what's this now? Especially because of the content of the message.
So Krista knew Michael through her boyfriend. He was one of her boyfriend's friends. And the text he'd send her just asked her to call him when she got to his apartment.
Right. So then the police are like, okay, so there's this guy, you know, occasionally in her phone history, he's there, you know, whatever, like checking in or whatever. And now suddenly she's going to his apartment.
Right. In Ossipee, New Hampshire, which would absolutely place her closer to Conway, New Hampshire.
Which also is a good distance from Portland.
Easily 45
yes.
to an hour.
Yes. Yeah. It's definitely a hike. And at 9:45 at night with a 14-month-old, interesting. Not a great choice for Krista, but you know what? To be fair, it is pretty historically known that babies do sleep real well in cars, so I'll give it to her. I will, because that is fair. But, and you know, for whatever reason she made that decision, we can't say or whatever. But it's starting, the police are like reading this first text like, oh. Okay, this is already looking very suspicious.
Once police chatted with Michael and just kind of chatted with him, you know, hey, Michael, you're not super unfamiliar to us because you have a criminal history.
Mm-hmm.
Nice to see you again. Yeah, sorry about Krista. We know you guys were friends. Tell us more about that night.
Mm-hmm.
And police were able to piece together more of what happened in Krista's last moments. When Krista got out of the car, she started to head up to the stairs. Michael lived in what I could only describe as an ugly-ass ramshackle farmhouse.
Right.
She was climbing up these rinky-dink stairs, and this is when she was attacked from behind and hit over the head 3 times in total with a rubber mallet.
In quick succession, ambushed, absolutely, without even a single thought. Like she was, there was no acknowledgement, just like she had no idea what was coming. And I think obviously she didn't know what was about to happen, but I really think she thought this was just a quick, easy thing. She had her baby with her. It was probably going to be just a really simple exchange of goods, or, you know, a quick meetup or check something fast.
Right. Because baby Aaliyah was still sleeping in the car.
Right. I feel like she barely got out of the car when she was attacked.
For sure.
Yeah.
The attacker was 28-year-old Anthony Papil, also from Ossipee, New Hampshire, and also a friend of Krista's and Michael's.
So she knew him.
Michael came over and helped Anthony bind Krista with duct tape before placing her body in her own car and driving it the 22 miles to Cranmore Mountain Ski Resort in North Conway, New Hampshire.
They had covered her mouth. She tried to scream. She, like, tried to fight. And I wonder if it was one of those situations. We talked about this on an episode before, the abduction and murder of Melissa Jenkins, where she was attacked. She was lured out by this couple who was, like, obsessed with her. She brought her 2-year-old son and had him in the back seat of the car. And they didn't know that. And so they attacked her and they took her. And, you know, in the back of the car was her son. And it was, like, the same idea. And they were like, oh, there's a kid back there, you know? Same thing here. When they got to the Cranmore Mountain Ski Resort, Anthony opened the trunk and found that Krista didn't react or like try to fight or scream. They had put duct tape on her mouth and like bound her with it. So Anthony, and this, I swear to God, this is, I read this and this is what he said in court later. He said that he decided to use his quote, lifeguard training, which good. Maybe he was trying to like humanize himself or say that maybe he was like somebody who had previously spent time saving people. But he had used his lifeguard training and checked her for a pulse, and he said that he did not find one. Which maybe he thought he didn't. But as you said earlier, Katie, Krista died from cold water submersion. So after he decided that he didn't find a pulse on her, he placed her body in the snowmaking pond, pushed it underwater, and then away from the shore. So either he sucked at being a lifeguard or he's lying, because Krista was alive. She was absolutely still alive. So basically, this piece of shit, I wouldn't be surprised if he just sucked at finding a pulse, but I think he was lying. I think they absolutely knew what they were doing.
I think he said that at the last minute, like, oh, I tried and, you know, I didn't intentionally kill her. You know, I didn't know that she was alive and I put her in the pond to try to get a lesser sentence. But I also think that in the heat of the moment when he said that, he forgot that she was bound around her wrists by duct tape. So unless he checked like a pedal pulse, or unless he checked around her neck, he probably forgot in his mind that you can't check the pulse of someone using their wrist, the most common place to quickly check a pulse, if the wrists are bound and covered in duct tape.
Right. Yeah, he wasn't the smartest bulb in the patch, as we say.
Krista clearly had no idea this was, obviously.
Right.
Obviously. But if she thought that she was in any kind of danger, she, A, would not have gone, or B, would not have gone with her child in the backseat. Right. So she genuinely was under the impression that this was going to be a friendly exchange, or just like you said, a little quick pop in and out, get back in the car, maybe even leave the car running with the heat on because baby's asleep.
Right.
23-year-old Trevor Ferguson picked up Michael and Anthony and gave them a ride home after they called him to come get them.
No questions asked. To pay him for their help, Anthony and Michael gave Trevor marijuana and cocaine, and they also gave him gas money, which was like roughly $10, $20, which is like, I bought gas today for $42, so that's really nice that it cost $20 back then, just as an aside. But the theory is that the marijuana and the cocaine that they paid Trevor with was what they stole from Krista.
Yes.
Which is unfortunate because, you know, that's their whole play was that, oh, it was a robbery gone wrong. You know, that they didn't intend on killing her. They were just going to rob her, you know, like that. Oh, they had lured her there to like sell her drugs. And then they ended up, you know, they weren't actually going to sell her drugs. They were going to rob her or whatever, steal her money. And then it just ended up being a murder.
Right. And it turns out that Krista had been selling drugs as, you know, a side gig and a way to make money, which, you know, that's a crime.
Yeah.
Not a good move.
No.
Totally understand that. She's doing what she's got to do.
Yeah. And it's, I think from what I understood, it was her maybe replacing Kyle while he was in jail.
Yeah. Because as you guys recall, Kyle was in jail for not only possession and firearms, for selling drugs.
Yeah.
So I think that he was maybe holding down the fort financially.
Yeah.
Krista was working. She was, you know, making her own money because they have a little baby.
Right.
But I think that Kyle was the main breadwinner just because he was selling drugs.
Yeah.
And I think that when he was in jail for that, Krista then kind of took over.
Right. And I don't know if it's confirmed or anything, if she did drugs. I don't know. I mean, honestly, marijuana at this point, I mean, it's 2011. I don't know if marijuana was illegal still in Maine. Marijuana is very much not illegal anymore in Maine. Like, people smoke it walking down the street. I've seen people smoke it at the gas station.
Yeah.
Like, you can smoke weed, like, in a, like, at a public pool. Like, it's everywhere in Maine. But I'm not sure if she did drugs herself. I think maybe she did, but I'm not 100% sure. But all I really know is that I think she was taking over.
Yeah.
And I think you're right, Katie, but it wasn't the right thing to do, but it was, I think, financially what she had to do.
Right. And I don't give a fuck what you do in life. Mm-hmm. You don't deserve to be murdered for it.
No, not at all. Absolutely not.
And that's another thing, too, like we kind of talked about at the beginning of the episode, where you automatically put that person in that category of high-risk lifestyle.
Yeah.
So then you associate, okay, well, yeah, it kind of adds up that they were murdered because they were doing X, Y, and Z. Mm-hmm. Okay. What?
What?
Like, stop trying to justify. Nothing about this is justified, you know?
No.
Even if she wasn't selling drugs, even if she was selling harder drugs than what she was selling, who cares? She was murdered. She was murdered brutally with her baby in the back seat. You know, she was just trying to go to what she thought was a friend's house.
That argument makes me so mad. High-risk lifestyle. According to Grey's Anatomy, doctors and nurses live a high-risk lifestyle.
For sure.
How many gun violence episodes and plane crashes and bomb threats that they have at that fucking hospital?
Even just working the overnight shift and driving home after.
That's a high-risk lifestyle.
Absolutely.
It's just like, it blows, makes me very angry. So it's like, and it really, what it does, all jokes aside, places blame on the victim every time.
Every time.
Yeah.
Every time. And then it also, in a way, removes everybody else, or everybody else uses that to convince themselves, oh, well, that couldn't happen to me because I'm not a drug dealer.
Right.
I wouldn't get abducted off the side of the road because I'm not a sex worker. So my body's not going to end up on the side of the highway and be unidentified. It's a coping mechanism for people who don't want that to happen to them. And honestly, it could happen to anybody.
Yeah. I think you're absolutely right.
Judge Robert Varney ordered Anthony, who was charged with 2 counts of second-degree murder, held without bail. Michael and Trevor were both held on $250,000 bail.
Wow.
Damn.
Yeah. Not much is super known about all three of the men. What we do know, and you kind of mentioned this earlier, is that Anthony and Michael had previous criminal records before they obviously heinously robbed and murdered poor Krista. Anthony was serving a 2-year probationary sentence at the time, which was for a conviction of receiving stolen property. He had also previously been on probation for criminal threatening. Anthony had previously been on probation for theft by unauthorized taking or transfer, as well as burglary and receiving stolen property. By February of 2013, all three men had been tried for their roles in the murder and had been given different sentences based on the level of involvement they had. As a baseline argument for all three men, prosecutors said that Anthony, Michael, and Trevor all originally planned to simply rob Krista. Simply. That's all. Just a rob. A simple rob. And this was, of course, because she had taken over selling for Kyle, as we already said. Prosecution argued that Anthony ended up killing her in the process and that he was the one responsible for her death, and that it wasn't necessarily part of the plan, but it was him that killed her. He's responsible. Give him the longest sentence. He's the one. You know, the rest of them should get off easier. And of course, you know, in the trial, we already talked about she died of cold water submersion, prolonged. We know that he didn't actually check her pulse, or if he did, he sucked at it and she wasn't actually dead. We also discovered that she had head wounds consistent with the rubber mallet. She had duct tape all over her upper body, her arms, her hands, and her mouth as well. And the prosecution was also able to prove guilt by pointing out that Michael denied ever meeting with her. So, A, there's your lie. Just a simple lie like that can really screw you over.
Mm-hmm.
And that his alibi actually included playing video games with Anthony that night, which also, very obviously, was a fucking lie. And hauntingly enough, their cell phone records indicated that they had both gone to North Conway that night, while both men live in Ossipee, so why were they there? And of course, as we know, Krista's cell phone records indicated that she had been to North Conway at some point that night, too. And she lived in Portland. Why was she in North Conway?
Mm-hmm.
Big difference. During an early interview with police, it came out in trial that Anthony did eventually admit to police that the two men were planning on robbing her for drugs, but that all changed when he struck her over the head. She lost consciousness. They bound her with duct tape, and they kind of were like agreeing that they had to, quote, deal with the problem. And that problem was, of course, getting rid of Krista, aka leaving no witnesses behind, which is so fucked up.
Right. And what would have happened if that passerby did not come across the car with Aaliyah?
Right.
What if something happened to Aaliyah? What if, God forbid, Aaliyah was abducted?
Right.
What if, God forbid, Aaliyah had to be in that car without food or water for days?
Right.
And Aaliyah ultimately passed.
Right. Like, there's so much could have gone wrong.
Yeah.
In that regard. In his trial, Trevor claimed that he was explicitly told that his role in the robbery was basically getaway car, like pre-planned. That was his role. Once he was there, though, he said that he overheard Anthony and Michael talking about Krista's body and where it was disposed. And then he realized that, like, oh shit, this isn't just like a robbery. And even though I got like the gentle promise of drugs and money, like now I'm in over my head and I'm now not just a getaway driver, but I'm now like an accomplice in a murder.
Mm-hmm.
Also, during the trial, we actually got some testimony from Michael Patelis's mom, who said that she actually lived in the same building as Michael and Anthony. It was like an apartment building and like a farmhouse apartment. I don't know. It was like a, maybe not an apartment, but like a, you know, rented out rooms kind of thing.
Yeah.
She got a call that night from her son that he pretty much told her to stay in the house and not leave. And she was like, that's weird. Okay, son. And then she also was like, I'm not going to lie to you guys. My son and his friends have real bad tempers. Real bad tempers. And the juries were like writing down notes. Bad tempers. Said, told mom, stay home tonight. Like, it just was all adding up. And the jury was just like, okay, these guys are guilty, guilty. Prosecution also argued in favor of getting Michael locked away. Because not only was he a danger to others, no shit, but also a danger to himself. Because on May 6th, which obviously wasn't like super long after Krista's body was found, she was found on the 27th of April. He overdosed on drugs. Obviously, he survived, but it's suspicious as whether or not it was suicide attempt or if he just was getting high and, you know, obviously he accidentally overdosed, but clearly he was a danger to himself as well. And that was enough motivation and enough of a point to kind of be like, okay, he needs to be locked away.
It was revealed that Anthony had worked at Cranmore and knew of the snowmaking ponds, and he admitted to holding her bound body underwater before pushing her further into the pond.
That's so fucked up.
That doesn't sound like something you do to someone who you claim to have checked their pulse and determined in your mind that they had since passed.
Yeah, that sounds like you're making extra sure that she's dead.
That's it. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And you could argue, you know, maybe he's trying to further submerge the body or hide it, but doesn't really line up.
Yeah, not really. Yeah. Again, he's not a great lifeguard. Not gonna lie. Michael Patelis was sentenced to 35 years to life in prison, with the possibility of 7.5 years suspended if he was able to complete drug and alcohol treatment, earn an associate's degree, which I thought was interesting, and also not commit any major disciplinary violations.
Anthony Papillo pled guilty on May 24th, 2012, and was sentenced to 50 years in prison for Krista's murder.
Wow.
Trevor Ferguson of Tamworth, New Hampshire, was sentenced to at least 7 years in prison for conspiring to rob her, as well as his part in being a literal getaway driver.
Yeah. I think Trevor's sentence was appropriate. I feel like obviously what he did was terrible, but he didn't actively murder her. And I think I believe him when he says he didn't know that they were going to murder her. And it sounds like he did get there after her body was already gone. And he was like, what? Come again? You, her body's in the pond. Oh, God. Like, I think he was just like, I get some drugs, I get a little money, whatever. Terrible, terrible stuff. I think Anthony and Michael, real ringleaders here, and God, what they did was absolutely messed up.
And I think it's really fucked up, too, that not only were they Kyle's friends, they knew Krista socially. Like, that was one of their really good friend's girlfriend.
Yeah.
who felt comfortable enough to be around them and go to their apartment at 9:43 or after 9:43 by the time it took her to drive there.
Yeah.
She felt like she could get there, be alone with them. She trusted them enough to drive there far. She drove far to get there. And late at night with her baby in the back seat, like, she trusted those men.
Absolutely.
And in one article I read, Michael had said, I was supposed to be her protector.
Yeah.
Like, I guess that one of the things that he told Kyle or he told Krista that, oh, you know, your man's in jail and Kyle's in jail. I'll be your protector now. No one's going to fuck with you. Even though your man is in jail, no one's going to fuck with you because I'm going to protect you.
What a messed up thing.
Yeah.
So hypocritical and so fucked up.
And imagine Kyle finding out too after the fact, like they thought that he was responsible.
Right.
And that's how he learned, oh my God, my girlfriend, the mother of my beautiful child, is dead, missing even.
Right.
My child was left abandoned in a backseat. Who, God knows what could have happened to her.
Right.
And then to find out, not only was his girlfriend murdered in such a horrific way, she was murdered after she was robbed and brutally attacked by two men that were supposed to be his friends.
It sounds like some of his best friends.
Yeah.
Terrible stuff.
And I wonder if he even told them, hey, I'm going away for a while. Can you look after Krista?
I think he did. It's awful stuff. And that is the horrible murder of devoted mother Krista Dittmeyer. Guys, we want to know what you think. Do you think their sentencing was fair? Should they have gotten more time? Who do you think was the ringleader? Please let us know what you think. You can find us on Instagram and Twitter at TrueCrimeAny.
All lowercase.
Or you can send us an email with your thoughts and feelings on this case at TrueCrimeAny@gmail.com.
You could also be like our lovely listener, Elizabeth N., who suggested this case to us, and utilize our handy-dandy submission tools to send us your thoughts on this case, other cases we've covered, questions, comments, concerns, and, of course, suggest cases to us that we could potentially cover in the future based in New England, please. You can be anonymous if you so choose. You can, of course, leave your name. If you do leave your name and we decide to cover the case that you suggested to us, we'll get a little shout-out at the top of the episode. Another way to earn a shout-out is to scroll ever so slightly further down and click the button that says thank you and go over to our Buy Us a Coffee page. You can buy myself a coffee and Liz a non-coffee-related beverageino. But as we always tell you guys, you do not have to spend a cent on us in order to get a little shout-out. You guys just being here and listening means the world to us. If you want to show your appreciation and not spend any money, you can go to your preferred listening platform. If that is Spotify, you can go to our page on there, maybe subscribe, do a little subscribing-poo, and then leave us a star rating. You can go to Apple Podcasts if you're more of an Apple Podcasts kind of listener, if that's more your vibe, and leave us a star rating and or a written review.
And if for some reason you do feel like spending money, and again, we don't want you to, but we would, if you so happen to want that, head on over to our website and go to our merch store and you can get some merch if you so choose. We have a few options out there. We have some shirts, we have some mugs, we have some stickers with three different designs, our logo, and some inside jokes. Please check them out if you want. We are always happy to take suggestions for merch ideas. We are always looking for that. We love to take ideas for everything, whether it be cases or merch or literally anything. So please send them our way. At the end of the day, we are just happy to have you here, as always.
Absolutely. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you. And with that, we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Goodbye.